Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, retired Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber joins us to share his inspiring story of resilience in the face of cancer. And we'll hear from the editor of one of Minnesota's most popular veterans magazines. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This past week, students across Minnesota headed back to campus after their long holiday break. A good handful of them are members of the Minnesota National Guard who are using state and federal assistance, as well as the GI Bill, to help pay for their higher education. The Department of Defense is in the process of establishing a voluntary education partnership memorandum of understanding with colleges one-on-one across the country. Their ultimate goal is to ensure all service members participating in post-secondary education programs are provided quality programs uniformly. Most public and private colleges and universities in Minnesota have signed the Memorandum of Understanding, allowing their military and veteran students to use the federal tuition assistance program that they have so deservedly earned. For that, I thank the leadership of these institutions, and I appreciate the support of Minnesotans in ensuring that our Minnesota National Guard members receive state tuition reimbursement. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is recently retired Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber, to talk about his military career and the incredible new book, Tell My Sons. Colonel Weber, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Colonel, can you tell us how old were you? How far back does your military career go, 20-some years?
Well, I've been in a military uniform since I was age 14. So I went to Creighton High School. And then I enlisted right out of high school in the Minnesota National Guard. And I did that for about 4.5 years while I went to college. That was a great experience. I was a military policeman right there in downtown St. Paul.
So you spent most of your adult life was in a uniform.
Yes. Yeah, and back then we wore the uniform every day in high school. They don't do that anymore. So I feel like one of those old guys back in my day.
Well, it gets worse. And can you tell us a little bit about your deployments and where you were?
After I graduated from Minnesota State, down at Mankato, I took a regular Army commission, married my wife actually 2 days before we went on to active duty, and we ended up serving in Virginia, Alabama, and that was a lot of fun, being a Minnesotan in Alabama, stationed in Alabama. That was quite a treat.
Could they understand your English?
Well, my wife was leaving a class that she was at, and one woman came up to her and said, "You know, I just love your British accent." So apparently we sound British up here in Minnesota.
Darn Yankees.
And then we served in Missouri and then back to Washington, D.C., where I served in the Pentagon or the Pentagon area for about 4 years because I was deployed out of that area. And then moved home to Minnesota for an assignment at the University of Minnesota, ROTC. And that was an effort to get closer to home because my father-in-law's cancer had come back, kind of with a vengeance. And we were wondering if he was going to make it. He is still here, by the way. But I made a career choice at that point to try and get into the full-time Minnesota National Guard.
And so, I understand you had an interesting tour in Iraq.
Yes. What an understatement. I mean, even I'm still amazed at the experience. I was the military assistant to the Iraqi chief of defense, which is a fancy way of saying I held his bags.
And you learned a foreign language, as I understand.
Yes. Well, it was frustrating to speak English and to wait for a translator, or sometimes not have a translator. I mean, I've commented that I would have given up my guns and ammunition for to be able to speak the language, because that was more effective to me, you know, when I first got there than any weapon. And so I decided to learn Kurdish on my own, which is easy when you're embedded with them, when they're surrounding you every day, day and night. He's an Iraqi officer. He's in charge of the Iraqi armed forces, but he's from Kurdistan. He's from the Kurdish region. So that is his native tongue. And it just happens to be a lot easier to learn than Arabic. So I always tell people, and I'm sincere when I say this, that I learned Kurdish out of laziness.
Well, it was pretty effective in being a liaison with the general, wasn't it?
It was very effective. I mean, I knew that it would mean something a little more to him by learning his native tongue, but I had no idea. I mean, he still calls me his son. That was 6 years ago. And I actually just spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and we stay in contact. And when he comes to the United States, I get a call to come visit, and I jump right on a plane and go see him.
And you were so successful as being the special liaison to General, is it Zabari?
Zabari.
Zabari,
mm-hmm.
That you were noticed, and they wanted you to go back to Afghanistan and do the same thing.
Yes. On the day General McChrystal was fired, General Petraeus took over, and I quickly found myself in an email exchange with him asking me if I wanted to join the team. And, you know, a stuttering yes was the absolute reply. And
but at the same time, you went to get a physical.
Yeah.
And we want to play a couple of clips from, you gave a speech on June 14th at the 237th Army birthday at the Minnesota History Center. And we want to play a couple of clips from that right now.
Now, before I begin, I'd like to introduce another person I brought with me tonight. If I don't introduce him, he's just going to bounce up and down behind me until I do. And based on the guest list, I know over half of you are here because of him and our relationship together. His name is Buford, and he's uninvited, and he goes wherever I go. Buford is stage 4 cancer. He's inoperable, and I found out just 2 weeks ago that the chemo that's been keeping him pinned down is no longer working. Now, I hate to sound morbid, but if you feel a chill in the air, it's because I've got another uninvited guest sitting in the back row. I don't know if some of you could hear him, but he's been impatiently tapping his feet against the floor this whole time. He does it to me all the time. His name is Death. And I mention him because I see him and I hear him at least once a month. And he whispers something in my ear that I'd like to pass along to each of you. And he says, live, because I am coming.
And Colonel, instead of going to Afghanistan, your life took a bad turn.
Yeah.
And you met Buford and...
new opportunities.
And what we haven't told our listeners is you are married, and your hero in your life is your wife, Kristen.
Yes, she is.
And you have three boys.
Yep. Three young boys. Matthew's 16 and the twins are 12.
And so as you tried to fight Buford... it cut your military career short.
Yeah.
And a lot of things changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I personified the cancer and all of the stuff that was going on with me as a way of being able to communicate with other people. Because when you use terms like fistula and catheter and drainage bag and all these different terms, and then that's the easy stuff. It only gets more complicated from that point on. It's much easier to relate to people. Because, you know, like I said, death. No one likes talking about death. And even when they do, it's an uncomfortable subject. Well, I needed to be able to bridge that topic with my own family, let alone friends. And I'm talking about my kids in particular. So it was much easier to refer to him as Buford. And in all the good and bad, because Buford has brought some good things to my life, too. As we say in the Army, he's given me opportunities to excel.
You've faced him, and you've shown us there's a Buford out there waiting for all of us.
For all of us, exactly.
And say at some point we'll see how we react to it. And
right.
Hopefully, when that point comes for me, I'll can do half as well as you've done.
Well, thanks,
Colonel. Before we break for the and come back, one other thing that you've done most of your life is keep journals.
Yeah.
And the journals are in your own writing and something you can leave behind, but.
Right.
It was the basis for a book, that and Colonel Morris encouraged you to write this book called Tell My Sons.
Yeah.
And, Colonel, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about that book and all the lessons that you're passing along to the next generation.
Great.
We're speaking with recently retired Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fellow veterans and supporters, this is Lee Alfritz, Department Commander of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, inviting you to join us for Memorial Day Ride for Healing. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veteran Memorial Education Center. For more information, visit rideforhealing.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined by recently retired Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber, and we're talking about the incredible new book that he's written called Tell My Sons. Sir, before we went to the break, we talked about your military career and Buford and the things that have happened to you and the fact that throughout your life, you've kept journals. And I understand that had something to do with your grandparents. And
yes.
Can you tell us about the journal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't start a journal until I was about 18. But when my grandma died, you know, I had questions. Long story short, I had questions for my grandparents and even my parents that they didn't have a whole lot of specifics on, weren't willing to go into or weren't able to go into detail about their regrets, about things that they wish they could do over. You know, remembered the interesting stories, but not necessarily the ones that I really wanted to know about. And so one letter in particular, my grandpa wrote to my grandma during World War II, and he couldn't remember writing it. And he said it didn't even sound like him. And I thought, I would never want to forget what it was like to write something like that, because it was so heartfelt. And so I just decided at a certain point, really around the time I went to basic training, to start writing stuff down. And journaling is an ugly business. I mean, I think real journaling is ugly. You just write down what you're feeling. You don't know what's important, so you write everything down.
How many pages of journals have you collected?
Oh, my God. It's a couple thousand pages anyway. And it was much longer in the first 10 years, I would say, than it is now.
Now, I understand Chaplain Morris was instrumental in getting you to take those journals
yes.
and turn it into a book.
Right. Well, the last 2 years, of course, I've been sharing with family and friends to keep them updated on my medical condition on the Caring Bridge website, caringbridge.org. And people read that, and then that's a version of my journal. I've gotten a lot better at writing journal entries over the past years. So, yeah, a lot of people said you should write a book, but Chaplain Morris really, really put the screws to me and said, you know, he convinced me that I needed to write it for more than just my boys.
And now that you're done, you've written the book, was he right?
I think so. I mean, there is nothing, I honestly don't think there has been anything more rewarding in my life to hear, in particular, high school students come up to me with tears in their eyes. You know, this book's only been out for about 10 days, and I've got high school kids coming up to me already, telling me that I've changed their life.
Amazing.
And, you know, I went to school to be a teacher, and I ended up in the Army, and I had hoped in retirement to go back to teaching, and I saw all that just kind of slip and fall away. And here it is. It's not gone. I've come to it in a quite unorthodox way, but here it is. And so what a great gift that's been given to me. Through this experience.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, the book is you've written it as if you're writing it to your sons?
Yeah, I've written it to them. It is in the second person.
And how old are your sons?
Matthew is 16, my oldest, and then I have twin 12-year-olds, Joshua and Noah.
So what all is in the book? It comes partially from the journals and from all of that
yeah.
detail that you've kept over the years. Are you teaching them some lessons? Are you trying to
yeah.
talk to them as if?
Yeah, I framed the book in 9 morals, and maybe even calling them morals is too strong of a word, but I'm very careful at the beginning to tell them that this is not advice. It may sound like advice, but this is really about just giving them my perspective, and I am one person's perspective. I happen to be their father. And I hope I live a little bit longer so that I can share more of who I am in person. But this is the next best thing. It's my side of the conversation for when I'm gone. And so 9 morals about life. And they come from a 1962 speech that General MacArthur gave to the West Point class of 1962. And so, like, you know, actions speaking louder than words. Well, we all know that, but what does it mean? You know, do I have some examples in my life that I can share? And I've got some great ones, you know, from the time that I was a kid. that happened to be funny as well as sobering reminders.
So, sure, you have a characteristic, even in talking about Buford, there's some laughs and
right.
Try to keep it light. Does that come through in the book? Do they
understand?
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, this is not a book about dying. And I cringe when I look at the Amazon listing and I see, you know, number 11 in grief and dying. No, it's a book about living. You know, I don't want my kids to dread picking this thing up. So, you know, it's not entirely light, but it's balanced, you know, and I think that's how life should be lived, with a balance of emotions. You know, there's nothing wrong with laughing. But there is something wrong with laughing all the time. You know, there's nothing wrong with crying, but there's something wrong with crying all the time. And so I sought to provide something that carried the full range of emotions for them.
The book is titled Tell My Sons by Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber. And is it available now, sir?
It is. It's tellmysons.com. Right now it's not out in bookstores, so it can only be ordered online. I'm small business. I'm a self-published guy, so.
And, sir, you've got quite a few, some very impressive names on the back cover that have endorsed the book. Can you tell us about a couple of those?
Sure. Well, Robin Williams wrote the foreword to the book. And that is the Robin Williams. And I worked with him on a USO tour when I worked in the Pentagon. He and John Elway and Leanne Tweeden, for those who remember her from the best damn sports show, I think, Fox is what she was on, and a guy named Blake Clark, who's Robin's friend. And so Robin wrote the foreword and John Elway wrote an endorsement, and they were just, you know, ecstatic to be able to help, you know, after they read this.
And, sir, you've apparently touched some people like the Secretary of Defense and some chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Yes. I actually just got a note yesterday in the mail from Secretary Rumsfeld. And he said he appreciated my use of the term true grit because I've had a combat patch that was made by my family called Operation True Grit. You know, soldiers wear combat patches, so they made one for me. And he referenced Louis L'Amour novels. And said he hoped the book was a booming success. But yeah, he read it and made the same kind of comment.
Colonel, it looks like you've done a great job. A lot of these speeches, like your last speech at the Minnesota History Center, when your retirement ceremony, when General Dempsey was in town, now you've written a book, you've got the journals, you did an audio book. you have left some legacy for your boys to at least go back and check in with you in the future, haven't you?
Yeah, it's just a wonderful feeling to know that. I mean, when I get comments from people, any of these folks that I've mentioned, you know, Robin Williams or John Elway or anyone who's been touched by it, the reason, I mean, ego plays a part in feeling good about it. But the thing that really makes me feel good about this is that if it's touched those people, in such a consistent way, I mean, the comments are very consistent that I get back, then surely my sons will see the same thing. And that's what I was hoping for. I mean, even General Petraeus wrote to me the other day and said that my book actually came out the day before he announced his resignation from the CIA. And he said he wrote me a note and said that he had just finished reading it, and it came out at a very timely moment for him.
Colonel, there's a strong message throughout your speeches and your book and everything, and part of it is that sometimes life isn't fair and it's tough.
Right.
And sometimes you have to take a knee.
Right.
But then what do you tell them after that?
You got to get up and move out. I mean, we know this in combat, but you don't need to go into combat or be in combat to know that you can't stay in one spot for too long. I mean, here we are in a studio. If you took a knee over here in this corner and you stayed there, you'd eventually die in that place.
We wouldn't get much done, would we?
No. It'd be a grim place to be in.
Colonel, we're just about out of time. You spent most of your adult life in the military. What would you say to our listeners today about if they're thinking about joining the military or the Minnesota National Guard and serving our country?
Boy, I don't know how anyone could take my answer as objective and unbiased, considering the fact that I've been in a uniform since 14. But I will say this, that every decision that I've made along my military career has been a very conscious decision, meaning that I've had doubts. as I've gone through life. Is this the right thing? Should I continue to do this? Because it does call upon you to sacrifice a lot for your family. And so I say that because I hope it lends weight to my comment about how if you can serve in the armed forces, I think it's one of the noblest professions that you can join. You are serving something bigger than yourself, much bigger than yourself. And that comes into stark focus when you're deployed overseas on behalf of the United States. For whatever reason, we get sent there. As you well know, as a Vietnam vet, we don't get to pick the wars we get sent to. And so I encourage my own kids. I don't care. I would love it if you served in uniform, but I want you to serve your country. I want you to serve something bigger than yourself, at least give something back to this country for the gifts that you've been given in this life.
Colonel, you've done an incredible job. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
God, thanks for having me, Tom.
The book is Tell My Sons by Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber. I encourage all of you to go out and get a copy. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll hear from the editor of one of Minnesota's most popular veterans magazines. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
While education benefits are available to veterans, military members, and some of their dependents, assistance is often needed to untangle the various eligibility requirements. In addition, enrollment processes are unique to each benefit package students are entitled to receive, which further complicates the matter. That's where our Minnesota Higher Education Veterans Program Coordinators come into play. Throughout the year, our staff at the Higher Education Veterans Program is heavily relied upon to provide training in their areas of expertise, which includes veteran and military education benefits, the creation of veteran-friendly campuses. Training is conducted in a variety of formats and locations, from drill floor presentations at armories throughout the state to post-deployment education briefings upon the return of National Guard and Reserve units. And lastly, faculty in-service days on college campuses. New education benefits, the economic recession, and sustained deployments have dramatically increased the number of veterans and military members attending college in recent years. In addition, new federal benefits have increased the number of dependents who are eligible for aid. The increasing number of veterans attending college in Minnesota has led to an equally dramatic increase in education dollars spent in Minnesota, which makes a significant contribution to Minnesota's economy. The amount of federal education benefits spent in Minnesota has more than doubled, up nearly $56 million during the existence of the Higher Education Veterans Program. This trend is expected to continue in the foreseeable future.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Al Zidane, editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire, which has been capturing Minnesota's military history for future generations and compiling it into the American Legion Legionnaire newspaper. Al, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
Al, I understand you're a veteran.
Well, I am. I served in on an aircraft carrier that went to Vietnam, and so I'm a Blue Water Vietnam combat veteran. And that was 1969, 1970.
Well, it's nice to have another Vietnam veteran on the show today, Al.
Yeah. I was a photographer in the Navy, so that's that was kind of an interesting profession on an aircraft carrier.
Did you get to keep or compile any of those photographs?
I have a little stack, you know, back in a metal box in my garage. So if the garage burns down, it'll survive maybe. But just a few. I'm surprised at how few pictures I did come out of there with.
I thought I had some too, but we looked for them the other day, and I can't find them anymore. And it's a shame; they're lost. But
yeah, well, that's a little sidelight. The Vietnam War was the era of the Instamatic. And so 90% of the Vietnam pictures are absolutely terrible. You know, they're fuzzy and they're kind of greenish, all of them. And just one of the sidelights, World War II, Korea, Civil War, they all have great pictures. Vietnam, not so good.
Maybe the pictures are really good, Al, because my memories of Vietnam are fuzzy and kind of greenish too. That's a personal problem, I suppose. Now, you are the editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire. Tell us about that monthly paper.
Well, it comes out at the beginning of every month. Our circulation is our membership. If you belong to the American Legion, you automatically get the newspaper. So we go out to about 90,000 every month right now. It's by circulation, it's actually the third largest newspaper in the state. We try to do stories that'll help veterans, news about the Legion, news about general news about veterans. What happened was I was the editor up at Hibbing, at the Hibbing Daily Tribune, for about 20 years. And I came down to be the editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire. And I used to get that newspaper in my mailbox up in Hibbing. And I know it went right from the mailbox into the circular file. And because there was not much in it that was very interesting. So I had to figure out, you know, I can do the normal things. I could redo the front page and the type fonts and, all that kind of stuff and the style and design. But I knew the real problem was the content of the newspaper. And I was trying to figure out, how can I make these veterans actually want to read it, want to open it up and read it? And so what I did is I started interviewing veterans, because I figure veterans would want to, hear stories about other veterans. And it's kind of worked. So we've done, I think, over, that was 17 years ago. So we've probably done about 120 or 120 or 130 stories about veterans.
So why did you start writing stories about the veterans, Al?
Well, it's their stories are interesting. Somebody asked me a while ago, I was actually talking on a radio show, and some caller called up and said, well, aren't you glorifying war? And I said, well, I don't think so. To me, it's just that you've got normal people, say a World War II guy that grew up during the Depression. They had a job. Maybe he was a soda jerk, or he was a gas station attendant, worked on a farm, worked in a factory, and all of a sudden, bang, they're off in this incredible war. These are just incredible stories, because you're taking normal people like you and me and uprooting them out of their communities, out of their families, and putting them on ships and putting them in battles and things like that. So the stories are, it's just kind of like normal people encountering incredible circumstances in their life, and that's always a good story.
We're speaking with Al Zidane, the editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire on Minnesota Military Radio. Al, as you've said, and we've heard this number changes all the time, but in Minnesota there's something over 370,000 veterans. Veterans are everywhere. They're your next-door neighbor. They could be somebody you work with, but they've all been, as you said, picked up and went off to war and came home, and they don't tell their stories very often, but there's a lot of heroes out among us, aren't there?
Well, there are, people have asked me, well, how do you get them to tell their stories? Because everybody knows their dad or their cousin or somebody that had a war experience, and you ask them and they go, oh, I don't talk about it, you know, or something like that. So, and my experience is that with the Vietnam guys, it's still very difficult to get them to tell their story. They it's still too close. The memories are too painful, I think, for a lot of them. Korean guys, pretty much, they'll talk about it now, but they're getting up in their 80s now, most of them, and late 70s, early 80s. And World War II guys, boy, you put a nickel in them, they're good for a couple hours. They like to tell their stories. I think the pain has gone away. What they remember, the good times, the things they did with their buddies, the funny events, and the other stuff too. But it's not painful to them anymore. And I think a lot of them are starting to realize that they're the last of a breed. You know, you ask these guys, you know, oh, you're the greatest generation. They say, no, we're just the oldest generation. But they have a story. They know they have a story to tell, and they're actually, a lot of them are very eager to tell it now.
Al, you've been at this for 17 years, and you've compiled some of the stories in a couple of books. Where are those books available, and where does the money go?
Well, the books are available. You can go online at www.mnlegion.org, and you'll see it right there. It's right there on the front page of the website. You can order the books. The money, the first book came out in about 2003. All the money went to the World War II Memorial. We raised about $70,000 or so for the World War II Memorial, so it was a nice cause. This is the one over at the state capitol, not the one in Washington. And the second book, we were looking around and we decided what's better than youth programs. So all the money from this book goes to Legion Baseball, Boys State, Girls State. We have a program called Legionville for Safety Patrol. And so all the money goes to those different youth activities.
And we'll have a link to that site on our Facebook page. Al, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about these two books of war stories compiled by Al Zidon, editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by Al Zidon, editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire. Al writes monthly accounts of veterans who served in various wars, and many of those stories are included in two books, War Stories 1 and War Stories 2. Al, you've been at this Minnesota Legionnaire now for 17 years, and you've had lots and lots of interviews, and you have focused a little bit on World War II, and you've compiled these things into books. Why are you focusing on World War II? Is it because the guys are getting older?
Yeah, pretty much that's it. First of all, they're great stories, of course, but there were 16 million World War II veterans, and only about a million are left. So one out of 16 is what we're down to now in the nation. And so, and in a few years, that number is, we'll get less and less. And so it's just, I'm kind of on a mission to capture as many of these stories as I can while these guys are still with us, and women.
We've done a lot of them over 17 years. Are there a few of them that are your favorites?
Well, yeah, I think so. In the first book, I was lucky to talk to, excuse me, Mike Colaleo, he was a Medal of Honor recipient from Duluth, incredible guy from West Duluth, grew up in a really tough neighborhood, and was a tough soldier. And I was getting ready to do the story, I was thinking, boy, this is going to be so great. I'm going to be able to ask this guy exactly what he felt like, why did he jump on top of that tank and, grab that machine gun and clear out those pillboxes. And so it came time in the interview to ask him, and he looked at me, he says, well, it was just boom, 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 that's kind of what he remembered. I'm sure there was a little adrenaline going at that time. But
a lot.
So it's just some great stories. USS Ward guys were, of course, from Minnesota, the first shot in World War II. That's in that first book.
Minnesota Military Militia.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's a nurse, Avis Shore, still lives in Bloomington. She was a nurse at Anzio. Hell's Half Acre, I think is the name. She wrote a little book about it. It's the name of her book. That's where she would treat people and soldiers that had come back from the front, and they would want to go back to the front because the hospital was too dangerous. They were getting bombed every day, things like that. There's a Vietnam story in there. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen the movie We Were Soldiers Once and Young, the Mel Gibson movie, and about Vietnam. And one of the guys that participated in that battle that the movie is about, his name is Galen Bungum. He's from southern Minnesota. In fact, you can hear in the movie, there's somebody's yelling, "Bungum, get your head down," or something like that. So he actually got his name into the movie. But great guy. He was part of that lost platoon, if you remember the story. This platoon ran off into the jungle to chase somebody and got isolated out there and had to spend about 36 hours all by themselves. And he was there
and survived.
And he survived. And then the second book, just a lot more. The cover of the second book is Leon Frankel, who is a kid that grew up in St. Paul and a little Jewish community over where Regents Hospital is now. And he joined the Navy and he started flying torpedo bombers. He flew off the USS Yorktown. He actually sank a cruiser and for this he got the Navy Cross. So now his time was done and he rotated back to the United States. The war was still going on. And the commanding officer called him into his office. This was at a base in California and said, "Leon," he threw him his keys. He said, "Will you go over to the train station and pick up my wife? She's coming in today." Leon said, "Sure, I'll do that." And he walked out of the office. Well, he didn't have the nerve to tell the guys that he didn't know how to drive. he could fly airplanes, but he didn't know how to drive. You know, it was just that the nature of those years. You know, he never owned a car. And so he had to go drive around the tarmac for a couple hours till he felt good about driving, and then he actually did go and get the commander's wife and bring him back.
So for those of us that are members of the American Legion, we can read these stories every month in the Legionnaire.
Pretty much.
And then these two books are a fantastic collection of those stories. They're beautiful books, and they're available where, Al?
Well, you can. They're actually available at the Minnesota Historical Center bookstore, and they're also at the Fort Snelling bookstore. Those are the two places where you can buy them, you know, as an outlet place. But the easiest way probably is just to go online, www.mnlegion.org, and click on where it says order the books, and it's that easy.
And once again, we'll have a link to that website for the books on our Facebook page at Minnesota Military Radio. Al, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about the Legionnaire or the War Stories 1 and War Stories 2?
Well, it's just a goal of mine to capture as many of these stories as we can, you know. As you look around, there's really nobody else is doing this. And so it's a good thing that the Legion can do and kind of preserve these stories, because once they're gone, they're gone.
Al, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
It was Al Zidan, editor of the Minnesota Legionnaire on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining us now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Ernie Johnson. Ernie, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, good morning, Tom. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Can you tell us what's new with the Minnesota Patriot Guard Riders?
Well, actually, you know, right now, it's been cold outside, but we didn't stop us from traveling around the state. We went to the various veteran homes in Silver Bay and Minneapolis and Laverne and Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, Hastings, and other points and destinations in the state, and did our traditional bingo. But it was so heartwarming. At this time of the year, they were waiting for us. You know, they applauded and all that. And you know, it's never ever been about us. but we had a good time. And like I said, there were people that made blankets, and they made gloves and scarves, and we passed those out, and with the cookies and candy, along with doing the bingo, it reminded you as you sat and watched something out of Norman Rockwell. I mean, it was that warm with the Christmas decorations and that, and they really appreciated it. And then also, Tom, we ended up getting a bunch of new people that came along, so they added, you know, new blood, so to speak, and it was really, really a good time. And as we said, you know, it's never, ever about us, but it's always about the honor, dignity, and respect that we show our veterans. And boy, this time of year, with the cold out there, there was sure a lot of warmth inside. So, yeah.
Ernie, are you picking up some pretty good new membership?
Well, you know, I'm not saying they're coming in by the 50s and the hundreds, but, you know, every week you are answering their message. I've joined. What do I do? And we get you on the newsletter, and we get with you. So they're coming in, and usually you don't see that happening until like in the spring when people start thinking about, you know, riding and getting to some of the missions. But we're still doing missions as well. So this was kind of a plus on the other side, you know, doing something for our veterans. And they are so appreciative of it. It just brings a smile to their face when they see you walking in. It is like I say, is payback. And I have never looked to get anything other than to do something for our veterans, but it was sure nice.
And Ernie, for our listeners, how do they join and who's eligible?
You do not have to ride a motorcycle. You do not need to be a veteran. You have to have a warm spot in your heart, and you want to do something for our veterans. And you do it very simply by going to www.minnesotapatriotguard.org and join. And one of us will be in contact with you and get you on the flag line with us. So it's pretty easy.
Ernie, you and your riders are doing a great job as usual. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. You have a great day.
That was Ernie Johnson from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, retired Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber, Al Zidane, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we find out about the groundbreaking Department of Defense change, allowing women to serve in combat jobs across the force, and we'll learn about the financial resources available to veterans and their families. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.